You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. Hello, and welcome to Mysteries and Monsters. On this week's show, we welcome back one of my most popular guests, as the one and only Ron Moorhead returns to the show. It's been 2 years since Ron last joined me to discuss his experiences in the Sierras and beyond. We discuss the possibilities of what happened and how it could be explained away by some. We also play some of those infamous recordings, as well as touching on some of Ron's other expeditions, alongside Peter Byrne, down to Lovelock Cave, and much more. I know you'll enjoy our conversation, and thank you to Ron for joining me once more. Other than that, it's been a hectic few weeks. I've appeared recently on Monster Fuzz and spoke with Robin Amon about ghosts, ABCs, lake monsters, and more. So check it out by searching for Monster Fuzz wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks again to the lads for having me. Also, I'm stunned to report that Feedspot have voted Mysteries and Monsters, apparently, the 7th best cryptid-based show in the world, which is incredibly humbling, to say the least. That's purely down to you, my listeners, and I thank you all for your continued support as the show continues to grow. Thank you very much. And thank you, Feedspot. Add that to the fact that the Ghost Story Guys has also been nominated in two categories in the Paranormality Magazine Awards this year, and it's not been a bad couple of weeks. You can vote for the Ghost Story Guys in this week's show notes, where you'll find the link if you want to support us. But before we get to the show, as always, you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up for Patreon for ad-free episodes, bonus content, and guaranteed early releases of the regular show. The link is in the show notes, as usual. Mysteries and Monsters can be found across all social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. And of course, the website is mysteriesandmonsters.com. A big thank you as always to Dean Bestel for his marvellous artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Stoll from the Ghost Story Guys, and Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange network. That's enough of me waffling on for this week's show. Let's welcome back Ron Moorhead to dive into a life investigating the extraordinary. Today, it's a very warm welcome back to one of my most popular previous guests, Ron Moorhead. Since the mid-1970s, Ron has tirelessly researched all possible explanations for the Bigfoot phenomena ever since that fateful trip into the Sierra Nevada mountains. Ron, I'm delighted to welcome you back. How are we?
Well, Paul, thank you for inviting me.
No, you are very welcome. Always welcome. I've noticed over the last couple of months, Ron, obviously last year the cryptid circuit and talks, the conference circuit was kind of torpedoed by what's been going on. So have you managed to spend some of the summer going round and visiting some places you were unable to last year?
Yes, they started the conferences back up. I've been in Minnesota and in Tennessee, and I was just in Gatlinburg here a couple weeks ago, and a couple thousand people there. That was nice. And yeah, things are going on. I'm here with I'll be here next month with George Norrie.
Mm.
Coast to coast guy, and be in theater with him in Everett. So still got things going on. Yeah, there's a lot happening in this field since the government finally let loose of their files and let us believe in aliens, which
yes,
most of us believed they were there anyway. But now it seems like that seems to be more of a acceptable thing than it used to be. It didn't used to be. You couldn't even talk about strangeness, but now all kinds of strangeness has come out of the woodwork.
Absolutely. It seems that weird things are becoming the mainstream, Ron, which is long overdue, in my opinion.
Yes, I've kept a lot of things under my hat for a while just because I didn't want to get discredited or just kicked off the team or something. But I don't care. I say what it is and what I experienced and what I've run across in the 50 years doing this, and it's been quite a run for me. And I've enjoyed it. It's what I do now. I'm retired from business, and so I was 29 when this started happening to me, and. And I've been searching for it ever since. I don't know that we've got any answers, but I think I got some dots put together, which makes sense to me anyway. And if it makes sense to somebody else, we're good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the biggest thing about all this, Ron, regardless of which side of the fence, as you refer to there, you sit in regards to a possible explanation. I think one of your strong points is always that you've never said you've got the answers, but you're more than willing to be as open-minded to the potential possibilities of explanations in regards to this phenomenon, aren't you?
Very important. That's very important, keep an open mind, yeah. And nobody knows. You know, we don't know. These things don't come in and talk to you about it, you know.
Yes.
They was trying to talk to me years ago, but I had no idea what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
And that's what got me kicked off on this, because they're there. And it's not, I don't go out and try to convince people that Bigfoot exists. These things are out there, and they've been out there for eons. And all kinds of history of them, all kinds of stories about them. There's thousands of people seeing them nowadays. And it's just a phenomenon that you just can't keep sweeping under the rug. Yet you still got some hard-knocked people that think that everything there is to know is known, you know. And, you know, you gotta keep an open mind and realize there's things we don't know. There's only certain parameters we see in. There's only certain frequencies we hear in, and it's just there's more going on than meets our 3D eyes. 3D yeah. Meaning three-dimensional.
Yeah. I think it is one of the frustrations about a lot of things these days, Ron, is that for some people, they seem to be quite happy with the presumption that we know everything, we've discovered everything, and that's probably as far from the truth as you could possibly be. We certainly know a lot, and obviously the way science develops and theories are disseminated out there, often it's trial and error. And I often find it frustrating where occasionally a scientist from a particular field will pop their head out and say, oh, well, we know everything there is to know about a certain aspect, be it astrophysicists or biologists or whatever, Ron, and yet every now and again, things turn up that just throw everything on its head, and those people are very quiet. They don't seem to say anything when something turns up like that.
Well, they get choked up on their crow pie. Rightfully so, too.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is frustrating that they're very quick to pass judgment, but seem to be very quiet when they come to sort of reevaluate anything that proves what they've said is incorrect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you know, they get a PhD behind their name, and then that's boy, they got to protect that, you know, and they try to give answers when they don't really know the answers, and I think that's not science, and yet they call themselves scientists. And I should say, I got all respect for them. I know those guys, a lot of them anyway, and They really want to inside, you know, they go to church on Sunday, they're religious people, but they can't believe in the woo. That you know, they got the parameters, their disciplines that they've been trained in, and that's all they're going to look at, and that's all they can, or they lose their academic credibility and their teachings and maybe their tenure a little bit, and maybe, you know, the next funding for the project. I know Grover Krantz went through that here in Washington when he came out with saying that those things exist, and he was going by the credible evidence of the Gigantopithecus, you know, which was found in Asia.
Yeah.
The remains of it, anyway, parts of it. So anyway, there's a lot to be learned, and I think people that think they got their minds made up or think they got it all figured out, they just need to relax a little bit and start keep looking. And don't throw people out the window just because they say something that you don't believe in.
Yeah, well, I think that applies to all aspects, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, Ron, because obviously there are, you know, there are always people in any kind of woo field or Fortean subject, such as cryptozoology or the paranormal, Ron, where people will claim to be an expert in a particular field when I think we both know, even, you know, someone with the level of research and investigation that you've spent, you know, as you referred to at the beginning, around 50 years now since that.
Been 50 years this year, yeah.
since your first trip to the Sierra Nevadas. So are you still surprised that, because obviously 50 years ago there were people that were saying that they were experts, and there were obviously the Four Horsemen who were very sort of defensive about their particular positions in regards to what they believed, and yet 50 years on, Ron, we seem to have similar people in similar camps still.
Well, you still got Peter Byrne. He's still out there. He's one of the Four Horsemen. I just talked to him the other day.
Yeah.
He's still chopping the wood, setting up trail cams. You know, nice guy.
Yeah.
Peter and I have gone back a long way, but he's the only Four Horsemen that's left.
Yes.
One of the four. And he's 95.
You know, I know. Guy.
It's amazing. There's new guys coming up, and that's good, but there's so much more now going on than what used to go on as far as people coming out of the shadows and talking about the strangeness that goes on. And you know, they can call it the woo if they want to, but they're putting Einstein and all these people that believe in physics, quantum physics, into that woo camp, because it's like Tesla said, what one man calls God, another man calls quantum physics.
Yes.
So, really, they're synonymous in my book, the Quantum Bigfoot that I just written. And I think the spirituality, when you get into it, you know, I was involved with several scientists, and it always coming back and forth to different chats and stuff. And I said, well, if everything's measurable, like Newtonian physics says, which is 1687, you know, and everything is based on everything being material or physical, or measurable, predictable. And quantum physics isn't that way at all. And quantum physics is the newer science that's out there. It's called modern science. And Max Planck, who came up with that in late 1800s, got a Nobel Prize in 1918, I think it was, for quantum physics.
Hmm.
And you know, just they're throwing these guys out, these really important people out with the baby water.
Yes.
Because they've been trained in Newtonian physics only, but everything is not measurable, predictable. I asked these guys that I'm involved in, I said, if everything's measurable and predictable, tell me how far it is to the end of the universe. And I think that's when I got kicked out of the club.
Well, that's often the problem with difficult questions, Ron. People don't like answering them.
Well, they can't. You know, who can say how far it is to the end of the universe? You know, how do you get your head around that? You don't. So if there's things like that out there that you know you can't get your head around, why don't you accept other things you can't get your head around? I think the human race is really behind the curve on evolution. We got to evolve more. There's things going on that's way above us out there in the spiritual realm. And really, they come into the physical realm. If you've been again to aliens and UFOs, which, like I say, they're now being accepted pretty much worldwide, I think we're going to have more and more of that going on, because they're letting themselves be known more, these alien craft. And their technology has been coming here for years. And it started right after we set the bomb off in 45, the Second World War, 47, when Roswell had that incident where the aliens crashed. And that really got there, a lot of things going. And the government's still involved in all that, but they don't share a lot with us, but they share what they think they think we can handle. I think they let little pieces of it out at a time so we can digest it a little bit. So when it does hit us, we're like Star Wars or something. You know? we'll be a little bit ready for it.
Hmm.
Possibly seeing something with five arms and 10 legs or something.
Well, it is interesting, because obviously when we first spoke was the summer of 2019, and then obviously things really seem to have developed, especially as you refer to there on in regards to ufology. And it is really interesting for someone like myself, who has a wide interest in, you know, in the paranormal and ufology and cryptozoology, to see how normalized the conversation about ufology has become, that organizations and people in the US Senate are openly discussing these subjects, whereas, you know, 5 years ago they'd have been laughed out of the chamber.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah, they since they declassified a lot of stuff, well, they got to kind of acknowledge it now, you know,
yeah.
And join the club. Yeah. So anyway, it's exciting times we're living in, Paul. I mean, yes. It really is. We're going to have a lot going on here in the next few years, if not sooner, because there's just too many telltale signs of something major changing, you know. And one of it is the presence of unidentified flying objects and somebody's flying those things. It's not all reverse engineering. We do have reverse engineering going on, though, from these crashed alien crafts that came here over the years.
Mm.
And I firmly believe that aliens are here now. They're just able to cloak themselves out of our perception. We only see within light's frequency, and that's a very small frequency compared to what all it really exists out there. You get into the spiritual world, and I mean, it just goes on and on. Just everything's in different frequencies. As Tesla said, everything is energy, frequency, and vibration.
Mm.
So that's very important to understand. And I encourage anybody listening to check out quantum physics a little bit if you're trying to look for the mysteries of things, how things really work throughout the universe, not just here in the Newtonian world of three dimensions that we live in.
Yeah, I think it is very interesting as well, because I've spoken to a couple of paranormal researchers over the last few months, Ron, and there seems to be a real acceptance by a lot of people in that field now in regards to using quantum physics in regards to looking towards possible explanations towards the paranormal, which is one of those things that when you see certain paranormal investigators and they're still, you know, using table tipping and Ouija boards and things like that, and you think, well, once again, it's all of that. Well, why aren't you sort of utilizing the tools of science that we have to try and evaluate any?
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah, the science behind Al Berry, who, unless anybody listening have ever heard me before talk about Al Berry, he was the investigative reporter that we took into our camp in 1972 and started experiencing the same thing we were experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get up there as often, but he got up there as much as he could during those years. And he said, don't talk about the strange stuff that goes on up here. You can't. It's like trying to nail jello to the wall. You can't really do it, you know. But we were having lights, having all kinds of things, sounds that you could not find the source of. And I don't mean just vocalizations like we recorded. I mean just different sounds. And we just know there was something strange going on. And this this 2016, when I was up there, when they had this light coming by us, I was out in a tent. And I think that's depicted in that 411, The Missing, The Hunted. And they did a real good job of reproducing that in 2018 when I took David Pilates up there. And they asked me how it happened, and we watched it several seconds. I mean, almost a minute, I would imagine, maybe two.
Mm.
Just floating by us. It wasn't like something struck by us. It was floating by our tent. And I say tent because the shelter is not there any longer.
Yeah.
We took that down. It was kind of dilapidated anyway.
Mm.
But anyway, something's still going on up there, and of course, right after we left, I was up there a week with the filming, and right after we left, everything was on fire, so
yes.
I don't think anybody's been back there since to where the campsite is. However, I did get in a little plane, flew over it, and it doesn't look like that area right where we were, where our camp is, was really burnt up. The trees are still standing there, so... you know, it's still just getting there might be a trick right now, because I think a lot of trees have burned down and on the trail going in. But anyway, it's...
Because you need a bit more of a challenge to try and get up there anyway, Ron. So what's a few, you know, a couple of trees laying about everywhere? Because it's not the easiest place to get to in the best of times, is it?
That's for sure. You know, if you've seen the 411 missing, it kind of gives you an idea of the trick to get in there. And then that's the second part of the story. How would anybody want to trick us with this sounds and all the things that was going on? Just come up there. How would they know he's going to be there? And how could they do what went on? Because I saw a UFO one that I'm pretty sure it was. A big blue ball come floating down, definitely controlled. And that was in the 70s. And I just kind of lost it behind the trees, but it wasn't little, it was huge.
Mm.
And so things, you know, just stuff. And it kind of leads you into Al Berry, who I mentioned a minute ago, said he had a master's degree in science. He says, whatever you do, stay with the science when you're talking to people. Don't tell them about this stuff. And So we did for a long time. Just talked about just the sounds we recorded and what we were encountering up there, not the strangeness, though. However, he did write a little bit about it in his book he co-authored with Ann Slate, and that's called Bigfoot. And I think he did that in the late 70s.
Yeah.
He talked about the lights that were following the Johnson brothers around up there. And him and I became good friends. At the time, we weren't enemies. Nobody's enemies up there, but he was looking for a hoax. We thought we were really dealing with something, and we were dealing with something, but what they were, we don't know. They're just gigantic, and they got that Bigfoot and a big voice. So we call them Bigfoot. Call them Bigfoot. But they may be the smaller picture of this whole thing going on, this bubble we're living in.
Yeah.
There's a bigger picture that we need to think about, and that involves ufology. And I think these things are maybe, through my research, we had a year-long study of the sounds we recorded, the vocalizations, through Dr. Curlin. And he established that they were inside, outside, and within, and above, and below, all over the spectrum of way outside the human range. Scott Nelson, the cryptolinguist, who got a hold of me in 2008 and listened to him, and he thought he heard it. He's just trained by the military, got 30 years experience. I mean, vetted him really well, because I've had all kinds of people tell me, oh, I know what they're saying, but it doesn't mean anything unless you've got some credentials behind you, you know? Well, he does. He's a two-time graduate of the cryptolinguistic school of Navy intelligence, something like that, in Monterey, California. And he's more than qualified, according to them, to do what he did, which transcribed a language within the sounds we had. And he says it can't be faked. And he was trained to in the military to detect deception in any language, and even if it is language. And language, by the human definition of language, is very important in this whole process we're talking about right now, because you and I are speaking language.
Yep.
And nothing, no other animal on the face of this planet is supposed to be able to have a language, like according to Dr. Lieberman at Brown University. And he said only humans have the MoCA mechanism, which is the hide bone into the tongue with the nervous system going to the brain. So when you see something, you can actually talk about it with spoken sapient language like we're doing now, which is a morphine stream of words. You get that, and all of a sudden you realize through the cryptolinguistic study that we had done by Scott Nelson, these things have a language, and they can't be faked. It was not faked, and it's been standing out for 50 years. No one can debunk it because it's not debunkable. It's just, they're real. Yeah. And yet you got these experts who say, you know, they can't be faked. It's real. There was no maliciousness going on. They were looking for 60-cycle hum in the sound. They were looking for every kind of... Al Berry just wanted an answer from a professional. Is there any fakery going on here? Would they speed it up? Because that's always been accused of, is just playing something backwards and speeding it up.
Yeah.
Well, no, that didn't happen. He turned his original tapes over to Dr. Curlin. And Dr. Curlin's, he's renowned. I mean, the guy is... He's beyond reproach. He's written over 100 professional papers, and he's just he's retired now. But what these people are saying is, oh, they can't talk. Like some of the people that have approached me, oh, they can't talk. They just ape out in the woods. Well, they ought to stop and do their homework before they start talking like that, because these things, at least the ones we encountered, I'm not sure they can all do that, and I have a basis for saying that.
Mm.
Because I think there's an alien component possibly to them. And that's what gives them their attributes they have, which is, I think, cloaking, number one, which just means they go out of our perception. We only see within our light frequency.
Yeah.
And anything goes out of that, we won't see. You talk about ghosts, people seeing ghosts. Well, they don't see the full body of a ghost. They just see through it. And I think these things are in another dimension than we are.
Hmm.
And they can see them through I call it the plasma field, you know, the fourth dimension of time, because they haven't, their vibrational frequency hasn't reached high enough to get out of where they are. Yeah. Either that or they've chosen to stay there to answer and maybe come back and be re-embodied into another person so they can do better, because that's all we're here for, is experiment.
Yeah.
And we're here to learn and to do better. And so if these things, Bigfoot, has a human component to them, and I kind of believe they do, even the difference in the tracks and the people I've talked to over the 50 years doing this, some of them can do certain things, and some of them just scream and yell. I'm not sure they can all talk, but even you look at the tracks, you know, the prints, we had years of the same type configuration of tracks up there, and yet they don't look anything like the Patterson track, which is kind of... You know, the film that was done in 1967.
Yeah.
I think maybe over the eons they have interbred or crossbred with the indigenous people, and some of them just became more human-like than others.
Hmm.
And maybe some of them just have lost, or have not lost, but their original attributes have been recessed now since they've bred with us stupid humans. We're not that smart. You know, we think we are, but
yes. But
they think, that's the edge they got. They think that we think we're smarter than them, and and, you know, they're more tuned to this environment than we are, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the interesting aspects, and I know you mentioned it there, Ron, was that I found it very interesting as the kind of knowledge has expanded in regards to the potential possibilities of looking into the quantum realm in regards to possible explanations or a scientific theory for some sightings. It's interesting... For me, as you refer to there, what Al said to you about just stick with the science, because I think a lot of people just presume that it was the sounds and the footprints and the interactions that were going on. But as you touched on, the Johnson brothers, I believe, were saying that they had experience of the lights going on for quite some time before you guys arrived up there. Is that right?
Well, it wasn't before. It was just during... We just weren't there at the time it happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of those years. I forgot what year it was, but... we were all... See, the Johnsons experienced this in 1972. They've been going up there since 1958. I mean, these guys have been there a long time. They're habit hunters. These guys could shoot a gnat out of the sky, you know.
Yes.
With a 44 Magnum, 50 yards.
Yes. I mean,
they're just the top notch.
Yeah.
And this didn't really happen to them until 1971, when they went there early to check out the camp and the deer population. It's just a nice place. I tell you, you get there, it's like heaven. Just very serene, and you can just sit there and relax all day long. So they just went up there and had these things come into camp, and Warren Johnson said he thought that one of them got burned on the stove or something, because they really made a commotion one night, and they thought at first it was a bear, because they weren't looking for Bigfoot. None of us were looking for Bigfoot. It just happened to happen. And anyway, when they went out later and saw the big big, huge track, 5-foot track in the mud there by the stove, which had been packed in earlier, reassembled. They knew they was in for something besides a bear. It wasn't a bear, and the sights, the sounds aren't like a bear can make. So they came out, told the rest of us, and for those who don't know the story, I got invited back because one of the guys who went up there experienced it, and he wouldn't go back. He didn't have a bite, but all the wives were worried because the guys hadn't come out when they're supposed to. So he said, I'll go back if you go with me. So I got involved. I was friends with all of them, but I wasn't a hunter at the time.
Yeah.
And I started hunting after that because I wanted to be part of the group, and that's how I got involved with the group.
Mm.
And we started experiencing these things over and over at the camp, and they'd come in, take the food. We underestimated what we're dealing with. We think, just like a lot of people think nowadays, they're just some big ape running around the woods and just hasn't been discovered yet. But, you know, still the strange stuff goes on, which you can't really answer it, so you just kind of put up on the shelf and wait till you can answer it somehow. And I think I came to some answers with the quantum aspect. And it is science. For these people who want to call it the woo or something like that, well, go ahead and call it that. But you're putting Tesla there, you're putting Einstein there, you're putting those people in the woo. And actually, I don't know why classical science can't just step up to the plate and expand their parameters a little bit and start considering that as a possibility. Because, like I say, some of these guys are... They go to church on Sunday, they can believe in God, and they hope they're going to go to heaven when this is all over, but can they accept another dimension or something actually goes in and out of this dimension into another one? They don't accept that so well because it's not part of what they were disciplined and trained to teach and to be in. So I get carried on here, Paul, so you just break me up and straighten me out.
It is one of those things as well, and I think one of the difficulties, and you mentioned it earlier, is that for a lot of these people, there are scientists that have a real interest in this subject, but they are penned in by academia. They are forced to ignore it or to treat it as woo or too far out because it can affect their funding and it can affect their positions. It can affect their reputations, Ron. And so for some people, they just don't want, as much as they have a real interest in the subject, they're just completely stigmatized by the normal parameters of what science should be, aren't they?
Seems like it, yeah. I know Jeff Meldrum. I've been in Russia and Siberia with him and John Benderingle, who's the late John Benderingle. He's passed away, but they're good people. They believe these things are out there, and Jeff, he analyzes foot impressions, and he's found dermal ridges, and those things can't be faked, you know. So
yeah.
But he's also putting the science, the classical science, in there. That's all he uses, and because he got the tracks, you got the Patterson film, you got the Gigantopithecus remnants, and you got all these things, and he ties it together with the relic hominid. So they're relic hominid. There's no reason why one couldn't have just evolved right up alongside humans like we are, and some may be just that, but I think the ones we dealt with has a little more to them. There's more of enigmas associated with them. We just don't know how they did what they did up there. I mean, there's times when I tell people that we thought our camp was being torn apart. We was inside the shelter with the door closed, and I mean, cans flying everywhere, and this we thought we were going to find a mess when we look out there later. And Bigfoot hadn't been doing that sort of stuff, but we looked out there later and nothing changed. I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
And how do you put a thumb on that? How do you explain that? How do you explain the lights that went by us up there in 2016? You don't know what it's up to. You don't know what it's all about. We just know there's more going on than meets our consciousness. And so all of us are just trying to understand it better. And I certainly am, and I've been doing it longer than most. And it's just now that aliens are among us, and I think they're among us now, we may as well go for it, you know.
Yeah, all or nothing, Ron, all or nothing. It is interesting as well, when you really delve into the Bigfoot subject, there are such a variety of experiences and situations. If you look at what you've experienced up there and the variation on traditional Bigfoot reports, Ron, I've often been very interested that there seems to be a real schism in regards to different areas of the US and Canada where the behaviour seems to be completely different. And what was going on and may still be going on in the Sierra Nevada doesn't really have a lot in common with, say, what might be happening in British Columbia. But then again, then you've got situations in states like Maine, and then you've got the difference in the reports in the southern states, in Alabama and Texas and Mississippi and those kind of areas, Louisiana, where there are variations in the track types and the behaviours of these creatures. And I think it's very easy to kind of try and make it a one-size-fits-all when we talk about this phenomenon. But I've learnt so much over the last 2.5 years speaking to a variety of people, and the amount of books I've read have taken me into situations and reports and witnesses where you can't just say one thing is going on in every aspect.
That's so true. You can't. That's why I come up with the theory that I think they're just, some of them are different.
Yeah.
They could be a different genomes even, just because I believe in the alien intervention into the genomes of different species on this planet. And I don't put, people said they say a dog man, I don't put those out with the baby water either, you know, because who's to say what could be out there? I think there's experimental programs going on with aliens and the species here on this planet. I think there's a hybridization program going on where they're actually hybridizing different species so they can acclimate their species to this planet. All kinds of this stuff could be going on, and I just think there is. And that gives an answer to a lot of stuff, and it's not out in the woo-woo land. It's just something you got to understand that. Because once you see, how does these UFOs just cloak, all of a sudden they're out of your sight? How they do that? Well, okay, what's in the universe? Go back to that question. You know, they have technology that we don't have, or that we don't understand yet, or trying to understand it. And I think it's all going to come to a head before long, though. We're going to understand a whole lot more before next decade's out, I think. I hope.
Yeah, me and you both. Me and you both, definitely. I think we already know a lot more than we did 2 years ago, Ron, because of what's going on and the seriousness that certain aspects are being taken now, and it's...
Exactly. Yeah, our governments are stepping up the plate and acknowledging it. You know, they've got a space force now. There's all kinds of advanced knowledge and technology out there that they're not even sharing with us yet, I think.
Mm.
Because it's going to screw up the economy if I were able to give free energy to everybody. Well, they can't do that and still expect PG&E to stay in business, you know.
Yeah.
The same way with living longer and all that stuff. It's all, I think, available to us with the technology that's probably known by our government, but they can't release it. Mm. It's like having an iPhone 20.
Yes.
Instead of 2012, you get a iPhone 12, you get an iPhone 20. It's probably on the shelf somewhere in China, you know?
Yeah.
But they won't release that until they've sold all the 12s, and then they come out with 13 or 14. Yeah, they're just releasing stuff a little bit ago, and little is what they think we can handle.
Mm.
We're being inundated. At the theaters, we're being inundated by aliens and UFOs, and I think it's just acclimating us a little bit to what's coming down the tubes.
Yeah. One of the aspects of this that... Did you... When this first kicked off, I mean, you've been very fortunate, Ron, as you said, because you were quite successful in your business dealings and it gave you an opportunity to have the chance to travel the world. And as you mentioned, you were lucky enough to go to Siberia with Dr. Meldrum. When you kind of started out on this path, did you even imagine where the possibilities were going to take you? Or back then, early 1970s, obviously, Bigfoot was whatever it was classed as, a relic hominid or a great undiscovered ape that had yet to be classified. And yet we now look around the world and we have situations in Russia with the Almaty and the Yeti still turns up time to time in the Himalayas. And then you have the Yeren out in China and Australia. I mean, one of the interesting aspects of your kind of experiences and the theories that you're investigating is there's a lot of parallels with what goes on in Australia with the Yowie, Ron. And I've been fortunate to speak with Tony Healy a couple of times. And there's a lot of similarities in regards to lights being seen and giant creatures appearing from behind very small trees and that kind of thing. And it's very interesting that out of all of them, the Yowie seems to have more similarities to what goes on in certain North American Bigfoot cases.
Yeah, there's mysteries going on. Yeah, it's also there. You mentioned this over in Canada, they got stuff going on that's very similar to us. People are letting me know every once in a while that, hey, I heard these sounds sound just like your samurai cry, just like the language you recorded. I heard it. Of course, they're not standing out there with a tape recorder, you know. And
yeah.
So that there's no corroboration documented, but there is a lot going on. And I speak at these conventions now. I'm mostly invited to the ones that are open. They're open-minded to the paranormal part. At least the audience seem to be, because when I talk about this stuff, I kind of try to put it out in a layman's term so that they can get a hold of it and not think it's just a bunch of woo-woo or something up there talking, because what I do have is the experience of dealing with it and the experience of talking to people over the years and interviewing, and a lot of people come out of the woodwork and say, you know, they won't say it to their friends or to the group they're involved in because they don't want to get kicked out, you know, but
yeah.
They've had strange things happen. And when strange things happen, they just don't understand, but they know that I'll listen, and I listen. And I think that's important, to listen and see what they got to say and don't shove them off just because they don't fit within your paradigm.
Absolutely. And I think that's the aspect of this, as, you know, as we've mentioned earlier. You know, nobody's an expert here. These are all theories and possible explanations. I've never heard you say, Ron, this is the answer. And yet, as we touched on, there are lots of people in different fields who will always say that they have the answer. And then something comes along, changes the answer. They don't say anything about that anymore. and I think it's very difficult that when you kind of nail your flag to a mast and say, right, it is definitely this. This is what is definitely happening.
Dangerous.
It is. And it also means that you become very focused on a particular explanation, and I think that works for both skeptical aspects of the field and also believers, because as anybody who has an interest in Bigfoot will know, there are numerous variations on what people believe it to be, and therefore often never the twain will mix, Ron, as I'm sure you're aware of, primarily because people will say things that don't fit their preconceived explanation.
I think they have to experience something. Once they experience it, then they think that's the way it has to be. And I've experienced things. I'm not saying it has to be this way with every Bigfoot out there, because I do think there's a variety of different types of them that have different attributes. And I think there's a human component to some of them. And I say that because of the hybridization program I talked about a while ago, and I think aliens are hybridizing our race. And that goes way back to biblical times. You don't even want to get into that. Ancient scriptures will talk about how fallen angels, or let's call them aliens, for the sake of another word, inbred with the human genome and created giants. Well, come on. I mean, you got all kinds of history of giants on this earth. And yet people have a hard time thinking there could be a giant out there now. Well, they're out there. And I know that. And I try to present it to people like, I'm not trying to prove they're out there. I just want to tell you what they could be. And what I've came to realize is they have different qualities, different attributes. But are they here to help us or hurt us? And what is the big picture? I mentioned that earlier. I think Bigfoot just may be part of the picture, not the big picture itself.
I've heard you say something, Ron, a couple of times, and it's made me chuckle, because it's a thought that often crosses my mind. Whenever I hear or see somebody in the woods that's got some recordings of alleged Bigfoot, and they start playing them in the woods, as we were referring to earlier, we've no concept of what possible language we may be capturing in recordings, you know, including yours and some of the ones that the Olympic Project have recorded and been sent from around North America. And it is very interesting that I think you've got to be really careful when you start playing recordings in the woods, because you've no idea what that recording is saying. I know you were saying you might be kind of asking for trouble by playing certain things in certain areas.
Yeah, people like to go out and blast the sound. I don't encourage that at all, because they may be saying something you don't want them to say. You don't want to try to mimic that or draw them in with that same type of sound, because I tell people they may want, they're looking for a mate. You know, you may be careful.
Yes, yes.
Or if they're arguing about who's going to eat you first, you know, you don't know.
Yeah,
Yeah.
And we still don't know what they were saying. We just know that it is a language by the human definition of language, and that's kind of important. So therefore, when I think they're part human, some of them are, I think it's important to understand what we are as humans, and I get into my thinking on that and what these things, how they do what they do. I don't think we were shortchanged with what we have, our abilities. I just think we haven't massaged them enough to really evolve into what we can be as humans. And maybe that's what they're trying to teach us, because some of them do, I think, try to tell us things. And can they do that telepathically? It's called quantum entanglement. That's when you think of a spool of fish in the ocean, you know, it's all swimming in sequence, or a flock of birds all flying in sequence. They're not talking to each other. How are they doing that?
Yeah.
They're doing that because they're one, and they're one line. They all move together. Well, we're able to do that, and we just don't do it because we think we're separate, but we got to come back into the oneness that the universe has for us, and that's what happens when you pass on and get out of this life. And according to Stephen Hawking, according to physics, energy, which we're all made of, at the most minute level, we are energy, just vibrating at a different frequency. Once that passes on and your body dies, it just has to pass on. It can't die.
Yeah.
And that kind of tells religious people, okay, I'll go to heaven then. Well, it also tells physicists, well, you change into another dimension. And then what happens after that, even Einstein wouldn't speculate on, because we don't know. We just kind of hope that there's a better thing going on out there. And I tend to think there probably is. We're here to learn and to experience this life and this three-dimensional reality, and try to do better by people, try to make the earth better, try to make people, everything better. We've been destroying this earth and destroying people and wars and all that stuff for just too long. We got to stop that stuff and get ourselves better in vibration, get our compassion level higher. We understand, and it's just hard when you got a whole world that's fighting all the time, you know?
Yeah.
I think that bothers these aliens more than anything, because I've heard stories, a lot of stories about these things actually stopping nuclear bombs from going off that we had planted, and disarming things, and different things happen that are contributed to aliens. And it's just interesting stuff, really. I mean, really it is, Paul. I get excited about this, and I just started chatting away.
It is one of those aspects that if you take into consideration and accept the possibility of alien visitors, Ron, then if you look at our history and what goes on in the world, if anybody's coming here from another world or another part of the universe, they can fly to a variety of places around this planet and see human nature at its very worst. And that's often an aspect of the UFO phenomenon that people sometimes brush off as, you know, some kind of, we're all one people and trying to, you know, trying to do gooders, and it's all throwing back to that sort of 50s, 60s contactee and the hippie movement and all that, about how we all need to pull together as one planet. But it's quite obvious that if you came from outside of this world, you'd think, what on earth are they doing? All they do is attack each other.
Yeah, I think that bothers them, because they're pretty going to screw this earth up more than what we're already doing. Really, they want this planet. If you think about this planet, it's a jewel of this solar system, and maybe a jewel for eons out there, but they want to be here. They've been coming here for years, and I've seen all this stuff in Peru and Bolivia. You see the remains of aliens down there, and you know, you can't deny it when you see all the worlds and this stuff that's been done by advanced technology. And so I think they're afraid that we're just going to blow it up and screw it up for them, maybe. I don't know. You really hope we don't. And I'm trying to do the best I can do to make things better. I'm trying to learn more compassion. I didn't used to have that so much.
Yeah.
And that's caring for other things. And I don't want to call myself a do-gooder, but I don't want to hurt anybody.
No.
I don't want that to happen. And I try to reach out and not offend anybody and try to have compassion.
Yeah.
And I think that's the secret of life, really, is just learning how to raise your vibrational frequency high enough so that when you do pass on out of this embodiment that we have, that you're going to have something better for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it is, and it's a very underrated trait regardless, and it's easy for people to overlook such things as compassion and understanding and caring, and it's, as you say, it's sometimes dismissed out of hand, but I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting the best for both ourselves and everybody else. I think it's something that we should all aspire to do better, Ron.
I agree, totally. We're online. We're on the same track there. And who knows what these things were trying to say to me up there and to the rest of us when we were interacting with them. And I wish I knew what the words meant, but at that time I had no idea. I just tried to mimic what I was hearing from them. And there's an area in there where I think they thought it was kind of funny. And maybe it was. You know, again, we just underestimate what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Just didn't know.
Yeah. One of the things I've often found really interesting is when I've heard the recordings and dove into the story, Ron, I think a lot of people don't understand that there seems to be a real kind of process in regards to what was going on in regards to the sounds that were recorded, because it seemed this is the other aspect of all this, because if these creatures, whatever they were, whatever they are, you know, if we're talking about 8-foot hominids, with the greatest respect, they could, you know, deal with us pesky humans quite easily. You know, at the end of the day, if a chimpanzee takes offence to a human, you haven't got much of a chance, you know. So when we're talking something that's possibly twice as large and a lot bigger, muscular-wise, then, you know, you've drawn the short straw whichever way you look at it, Ron. And it's very interesting that despite everything that was going on up there and that you were going through, it seemed like there was some kind of gradual acceptance that they seemed to be quite, I wouldn't say necessarily angry, because once again, you're trying to describe a language and a vocalization structure that we don't really comprehend. We can say, oh, well, it sounds angry, that, but for all we know, they could have just been laughing at you. And yet, there seemed to be a real development. Is that how you look back on it, Ron, in regards to built?
Yeah, when we started going up there in 71, I went up as much as often as I could. The sounds were very aggressive sounding, you know, very ape-like and very, a lot of chatter, fast chatter, very similar to what Albert Osman reported to John Green in the 50s when he encountered them in 34, I think it was, in Canada. So they were chattering amongst those. Well, they were chattering, but again, you don't know what they're saying, but they sound very aggressive at the time. And it wasn't until 1974 when they were actually, according to cryptolinguists, they slowing their vocalizations down to what they thought we might be able to understand, because they speak it very rapidly. And they talk over each other, too. And at the time, we didn't know. We're all heavily armed. I can tell you, we wasn't going to take a chance on these things eating us. So we didn't think. We're ready inside that shelter with our guns cocked, ready to shoot a way out if we had to. But they didn't come in like that. They didn't. I think they could have tore the shelter apart very easily. And I don't know if those guns we had would have done much good to us. These things are so big and tough, and who knows what was going through their heads. But I know when the 74 came around and these things started yelling out at me when I was outside the shelter, which was pretty neat, because usually they'd wait till we were inside.
Yeah.
And I started mimicking them back, and this went on for quite a while that night. And I don't know what they were trying to say, but it was like a question. You could hear the inflection of a question on my recordings.
This one talk to this.
Someday, no, but I don't know at this time what they're trying to say. But maybe they're just trying to tell us, settle down, get the world to settle down and stop hurting each other. I don't know.
Mm.
Come on. You're not very sociable tonight. Now, come on down. Okay, I'll go back here.
I don't like to keep saying I don't know either, but I really don't know.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with saying you don't know, Ron. And I think too many people don't accept that as a plausible response. If you don't know something, it's better to be honest about it, I think.
Well, I do. You know, I have people ask me questions. I say, if I don't know, I don't know. And I don't know. I just say that. But a lot of people think they have to get an answer because I've been doing it for so long, I should know everything. Well, you know, the definition of an expert is someone who knows a lot more than somebody else. So
yes.
People want to call me an expert, but I don't see myself as an expert. I know more than what I know. But like you take Dr. Curlin now in the classical field, he's considered an expert.
Mm-hmm.
You take Scott Nelson in the field that he's in, he's considered an expert because he does what he does.
Yeah.
And these people, the lady called Nancy Logan, she listened to him in between these guys in the 90s, I think it was, and She's at the time she was only one of 10 court interpreters in several languages in California, one of 10 certified in all these different languages, and she has perfect pitch, perfect hearing. And she says a human can't do this. She challenges any human to even try it.
Mm.
And she's an expert. So you get these experts chiming in, and then you get some of these people say, oh, they're an ape in the woods. Again. Well, maybe that's what was their experience. They saw an ape in the woods. They seen the Patterson film. It's an ape in the woods walking on Bluff Creek.
Mm.
Well, but who knows what that represented? And who knows what we ran into represents? We don't know. But I think I'm getting a little bit of a picture with all these dots I'm putting together from the people I've talked to, from people who've experienced similar things like I've experienced. I can all work in Australia on it. And you kind of have to draw a picture of what these things could be. And I think they're just different types of them. And I think what we were dealing with up there has some, maybe they were total aliens. I don't know. Because really, we encountered them for years. It wasn't like we ran up there and just all of a sudden started catching them all the time. But this went on from really close-up stuff through 76. And then we've also had same happening all the way through the years, but nothing as significant as what was happening in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And but this lights and these different strange things still happen. And it wasn't until 2011 when I had my last vocalization that I heard, you know, as far as chattering goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I write about that in my book, Voices in the Wilderness. I think it's one of the last chapters in that book.
Yeah.
I talk about encounter I had when I was up there by myself, and that's kind of a spooky thing because you still don't know what they represent, and you don't know if you're going to get kidnapped or carried away or what's going to happen, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other aspect of all this as well, Ron, is that regardless of what was going on and the interactions and the call and response that was going on for a lot of it in those 70s periods, obviously, you weren't permanently at the camp, so it would have been very easy for them to have just trashed it and smashed it to bits and given you a clear sign that wherever they thought you were, they didn't want you back. But that never happened either, did it? So it's very interesting that regardless of this kind of change in the way that the vocalizations seem to...
Be more communicative.
Yeah.
More communicative. Yeah. Yeah, because before, you know, in 71, 72, they were pretty much chattering to themselves. Where 74, they were crying out to us. One of them was.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also chattering between us. They were chattering. I think there was a little one there that night when I was recording. You hear this little voice, and then you hear a big one coming down on it. Then you hear the big samurai cry, which just comes. That's the night I got to see one, by the way. That's how long it takes. Unless, again, maybe they were there and we just didn't see them, too, because A lot of people are worried they're just great camouflage artists. You know, they can blend right into a tree. Well, yeah, maybe they can, but maybe there's more to them than that even. Maybe they can go out of your perception, and that's what I get into too. And I've had a lot of people. In fact, the episode right after me in 411, this lady was tree hunting. I don't know if you remember this or not. But
yes, yeah, yeah,
up
yeah.
In a tree, and she's seen this this picklization form going from one tree to another. And at the same time, down in the town, there was a UFO that was being seen by a bunch of people at the school. So, you know, I've heard that same description several times and over the years. And what is that? They're going out of our three-dimensional perception. And can they go into the fifth dimension? But how do they change their energy, which we are made of? Our body is energy. Mm. And their body would have to be energy. But how does that energy change from matter that it is into just energy only? What would you see? Would you see that picklization? And that's what I think happens, because I've also heard people talk about their trackways just stopping. Well,
yeah,
how does that happen? You know, most researchers just throw people out again with the baby water there.
Yes.
And just no, trackways can disappear. They can't disappear. If they disappear, the helicopter come down and pick the thing up, right?
Yes.
No, they can go out of their mass of a physical mass and change it into energy through a vibrational frequency that they can create. And if they could do that, they wouldn't have density, because you don't have any density in the energy. Mm. So that would stop their trackway. And that happened to me, and my daughter had saw one, and we found this trackway, and I mean, they were deep, and I followed it, and all of a sudden they just stopped. And that's the first time it ever happened to me, but it did happen. And so I'm looking around the tree and looking, well, maybe these people aren't as nuts as I thought they were.
Yes.
Because if it happens to you, you got a different perspective. Well, okay, I better think about this a little bit. And so you do. And it's exciting, I got to tell you, it is.
Yeah.
And it's the most exciting thing. I've done a lot of things in my life, but this what I'm doing right now is exciting.
Yeah. Aspects of it like that are both exciting and perplexing, Ron, because like you say, there are numerous cases where things have been seen or experienced or heard or whatever, and then people will, you know, often in a farmer's field or something, they'll come across a set of tracks that just stops halfway through the field, and you're like, well, where's that gone?
Mm-hmm. There you are, density.
Yeah.
They change their matter into energy through a frequency vibration, which theoretically should be workable, but how do they change back into matter later on? It has to be through frequency, because everything is energy, frequency, and vibration. Again, get into physics, and you realize what we really are at the most minute level is energy vibrating at a frequency, and if you can find the frequency of something, you can change its matter.
Yeah.
Well, that's what even masters of old tried to teach us. There was a guy 2,000 years ago, he was trying to teach us how that works, how we can do what he was doing. But none of us are walking on water yet. You know, we haven't learned how to do everything we're supposed to be able to do.
Yeah.
We weren't shortchanged. I think we just have our attributes have just been muted down. And like our pineal gland, which I read about in my book too, which is inside our head, the third eye, you know, that we all have. It's been calcified. We don't know how to communicate with it. That's what really, I think that's receptor in our heads. It kind of leads us into what we're supposed to be doing. But you got to learn how to hook into it with your brain.
Mm.
And your heart has to be in coherence with your brain.
Yeah.
Another aspect of how we're supposed to be as humans. And if these things have learned how to do this stuff that I'm talking about, they can probably walk through a wall. Because they can change their mass into energy. And that's when you'll see a ghost effect, too.
Yeah.
Pixelation.
Yeah. I heard you recently say that you were, I think this was a couple of months ago, Ron, you were on your way to Alaska, I believe, to do some investigation. What was that regarding, or is that something that's still ongoing?
Yeah, it's happened. It's a Travel Channel thing, which I was up there in May. Yeah, and filming, but I can't really talk about it. It's not released yet. I have to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah, no,
it
no,
should
no,
be out by, but maybe later this fall. It's an 8-part series, I think they're going to.
Oh, yeah,
it may be February of next year before it's out. Who knows?
Yeah.
These people, you never know about production companies, but these guys were highly funded, so they're going to make this happen. Should be good.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I look forward to that. Anything that usually involves strange things in Alaska is always an enticing mixture straight away, Ron. So I'm already looking forward to that. So no doubt we'll probably not get that here in the UK till probably next year. We're always about 6 months behind the US release.
It should be interesting. I was up there with the locals, and there's some stuff going on up there.
Mm, yeah, there's some very interesting cases from Alaska on a variety of topics. So for you, Ron, what's next on your agenda? Have you got any kind of more irons in the fire in regards to books or investigations in general? And if so, are you still working with the Olympic Project and dipping in and around the US?
I'm in and out. Yeah, I'm traveling a lot, which is a little bit more than I really want to. But I've been back east 3 times now this year. And I got this other one with George Norrie here in September. I think it's the 23rd, 24th, something like that, at Everett Theater, Everett, Washington. Other than that, I just get on broadcasts like this, programs, and talk about what I have a passion for and where it's kind of led me all these years. And I'm 79, so I don't really jump around the woods and cross logs over big rivers like I used to. Yeah. I used to be indispensable, you know, but I think I might be dispensable.
Well, if Peter Byrne can still do it, Ron, you've no excuse, my friend.
Well, Peter Byrne's quite the colorful character, too. I mean, he's got a lot of history. Yeah. I was in Nepal with him a few years back, and we crossed over Nepal together from Kathmandu all the way. Well, flew out of Los Angeles into Bangkok. 17.5 hours. I had a headwind like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
Then I had a 3-hour layover in Bangkok, and I went up to the Kathmandu, and we got in a van, and we had a driver and the owner of the van. We sat in the back. Peter says, you never want to sit in the front.
Yes.
And you realize that's why all their windshields are cracked in front. You know?
Yeah.
The country that has the most windshields cracked is called Bangladesh.
Yeah, it's
that's a joke. But anyway,
yeah.
We drove all the way across Nepal into western Nepal to where his honey reserve used to be.
Yes.
It's just a good place now, open to the public, that people can go in and take pictures. And basically looking for lions and tracks to assess the population of the tigers over there. And they have a military patrol there all the time watching. If anybody comes over with a gun, they're ordered to shoot them on the spot. So
yeah.
Gotta be kind of careful.
Yeah, very much so. I'm going to say, because I've seen a few expeditions looking for the Yeti that have gone out there. That is probably one of the most hair-raising airport landings I've ever seen, Ron.
Yeah. Well, I went up there. I forgot the name of it. It starts with an L.
Yeah.
I'm a pilot, too. You know, I've had an airplane most of my life, and I've flown up into the Toby Inlet, where Osman was supposed to be kidnapped, and done a lot of explorations all over because of the flying part that I had access to. But commercially, I go commercially when I go to long places over, like in Nepal or a place like that, or South America. I flew down there commercially. Went into Paracas, Peru, to investigate the long, elongated skulls to see if there's any crumb trail of those skulls that's associated with the sagittal crest that people so often report on Bigfoot up here. And there is, you know, there's a story of the Incas warring with the Aztecs and Mayans in Central America. Then you got them with stories about warring with giants in north of them, which would took us to the United States. And then you got the Lovelock Caves, the Paiutes. I've been over there 4 times, and the Paiutes say they warred with giant cannibalistic red-haired giants, and they drove them into the Lovelock Caves, you know, and there's quite a history there. And you got the minaret skulls, which was found in the minarets by Dr. Denton years ago. He found this huge skull, and it looked human, and he sent it off to UCLA, and that's where the story ends, because UCLA don't have it, which happens to so much of that stuff. You know, they don't want to change the narrative that the government allows out. They just allow a certain narrative to be released, and that's all you're going to hear. So that's why you don't see the giant remains, even though there's a whole history of giant remains on this North America continent.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask you about Lovelock Cave, actually, Ron, before you go, because I remember once on one of your expeditions, didn't you come across a handprint that ended up being removed for some reason or something.
Yeah. I was there once, and we saw this handprint. Well, it looked like a handprint. You don't know it's a handprint because it's just a huge hand on there. It had this goop on it, which you look in the ceiling of this place. It's got this black goop, whatever you call it, I don't know what you call it, but this big boulder down below, which is pushed up against this, looked like maybe the entrance to another part of the cave, but had this big handprint on it. And I say handprint, it just had a thumb and five fingers.
Yes.
And I filmed all this, and I thought, this is unique. And, of course, M.K. Davis and Don Monroe were there, and they claimed it a handprint, and they went out and shot it off on the internet right quick. And I said, before I knew that, I said, don't talk about this yet. And they did, and I went and told L.A. Mazzullo, who I'd been to South America with, he wanted to see it. So I flew into Reno, I met him there, and we went over there, and it was gone. So what happened was, when BLM didn't want the attention drawn to that cave, that there's giants around, because they denied giants being there.
Yeah.
However, the Paiutes don't, written in Sarah Wittemucka's book. About the giants. In fact, she supposedly had a dress made out of their hair, some of the hair. And they say they weren't human. They were something else. They were eating them. They were actually cannibalistic.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I was there. I've been there four times, and it's interesting cave, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of it's caved off now, and, of course, the Humboldt bed there is dry. It used to have water in it a long time ago.
So what's next for you then, Ron? Is it just a case of conferences where you can? Is there another book in the pipeline, or is it just a case of taking things steady now, as you refer to? You can't be out chasing things through the woods, whatever it is.
Well, I just I don't I can it's conferences mainly. I don't have another book in the works, which a lot of people ask me to, but I might do a audio book. Things are coming to, because my site right now, I'm getting so busy I can't keep up with trying to mail things out. And right now, when you order my book, either one of my books, you can download them, but you can order the actual book through my site, which feeds out of Amazon.
Yeah.
And they just send it out without me having to deal with it, and I like that part. Well, it's just too much. You know, I sell a lot of those every day, and I don't have time to do that. And plus, I'm 79 now. Gosh. You've got to be thinking about your kids at this point. You know?
Yeah. You've got better things to do than stuffing envelopes, Ron.
Well, I'll be doing this as long as I can, because it's my passion. It's what I think people need to hear what I think. Because, again, there's not too many people my age that's been doing this for 50 years. That's open-minded. There's a couple out there that does it, but they're not open-minded. You know?
Yeah.
They're just, they got their minds made up, and I don't make my mind up.
And long may that continue. So, Ron, where can everybody find your website and get hold of these books and find out more?
Yeah, it's Ron Moorhead, M-O-R-E-H-E-A-D, 10, ronmoorhead.com. And that takes you to my site, and that's where my store is, and you can read about some of the articles I've written, and my books are available there. I was selling the books with a CD included, but I couldn't get Amazon to pack those, you know, right? So I was offering a color one with a CD. I was shipping out from here, but I can't keep up with that anymore anyway, so I'm going to take those offline now. I don't know where I'm going to be. You know, I'm just kind of go with the drift here, and I just do what I don't solicit trying to speak places. They usually come to me, and I just say yes or no, I can or I can't. And I'd do what I'm doing right now with you.
Yeah.
It's an honor to be on programs with you and different people who do the same thing. And that might get the word out. It might open some people's minds up to, hopefully, if I could just make a good change in people, I would love it. Because that's really, we're here for the experience. And the better you can do, the higher your vibrational frequency goes. And that is so good for you in every respect.
Yeah.
I mean, it keeps you from getting sick. I don't get sick anymore. I haven't been sick in years.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing to be better.
Yes.
And the people don't, you know, these people are fighting wars and doing bad things. like I've heard said, it's evil people doing evil things, and that's what evil people do.
Yes.
Got to stop, knock that off, and make this earth a better place. We're going to destroy it for the aliens. We don't want that.
No, very true. Well, Ron, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming back. It's been, I can't believe it's been 2 years. It's been too long, but thank you again for fitting me in.
I love your accent, too. Of course, it's not an accent where you're from. But I love listening to you. You're a good talker.
Oh, well, thank you. Likewise.
So thank you so much for asking me.
Oh, you are very welcome, and you are always welcome. You take care, and hopefully we won't leave it 2 years till next time you're on.
You take care, too, Paul. Thank you.
That's not mine.